Thanks, Arnie. Thanks very much for coming this afternoon. I'm going to talk to you very quickly about a couple of studies that have been performed by the organization that I work for, the National Academy of Sciences and its Institute of Medicine, and our research effort. I'd like to encourage anybody who wants more detail on this to pick up the set of handout slides I have at the back of the room, or the National Academy's websites, which I'll put up at the end of this talk, are the other good place to get data on this. What I'd like to do is a few things, just tell you briefly about the National Academy of Sciences, summarize our work regarding dioxin in Agent Orange, and tell you about the current status of one of our studies related to Vietnam veterans and to the use of herbicides in Vietnam. Now, the National Academy of Sciences is not part of the federal government. We're an independent organization that was created back during the Lincoln administration to give advice to the federal government. I worked for a part of the National Academies called the Institute of Medicine. We were carved out in 1970 to provide a focus for studies related to medical topics. We have a very particular study process for all of our work. We form committees of volunteer experts. We write reports based on literature reviews, and we have those reviews subjected to standard scientific protocols for a review of academic studies. Now, veterans and Agent Orange studies, we've been doing those since 1994, and we're doing so under the direction of Congress, but under the funding of the Department of Veterans Affairs. We've produced a rather large series of reports in this study, basically one to two every 2 years, and we'll continue to do so through 2014. When we perform these studies, we take a look at four compounds that were the primary components of the herbicides used in Vietnam, 2,4-D, 2,4-5-T, cacodylic acid, and picloram. Agent Orange itself is a 50-50 mix of 2,4-D, 2,4-5-T. Some of these other herbicides went into other formulations that were used in various applications during the war. How do we do our work? They're literature reviews. We review literature on Vietnam veterans' health, on occupational health, environmental health. Each one of our update reports, the ones we do every 2 years, focuses on the latest research, but looks at the literature as a whole when drawing its conclusions. We also look at some toxicologic work, that is not work done in humans, but in animals or in the lab, to try to inform our analysis of the health effects of dioxin herbicide exposure. In order to summarize our conclusions, what we do is to categorize the information that we learn. And we've set up four categories for those. Those are all based on statistical association. For those of you who are familiar with epidemiology, statistical association alone is a rather weak criterion to use for evaluating a health effect, but that was the decision rule that the Congress asked us to use when they first asked us to perform these studies. We also get particular questions that the Department of Veterans Affairs asks us to address. In this last and most recent report, update 2008, one of those questions was, should hairy cell leukemia, which is a form of leukemia, be included in the categorization we'd previously done for chronic lymphocytic leukemia? Committee, the expert committee we formed to perform this work said yes, indeed, that those hairy cell leukemias were similar enough to chronic lymphocytic leukemia that that was an appropriate inclusion. The second question, and perhaps a question this audience might be a little bit more interested in, was should further research be aimed at trying to understand whether Agent Orange effects were occurring in the adult children and the grandchildren of Vietnam veterans? And the expert committee that was formed to answer this question replied that the work being done, especially epigenetic research, for those of you who are up on that particular form of study, indicates that it is appropriate for us to take a better and more thorough look at the issue of whether the children and grandchildren of U.S. veterans of Vietnam, and those are the only people that we've been asked to study by Department of Veterans Affairs, might be affected by their exposure. Now, as was previously mentioned, we've drawn some conclusions about the potential association between herbicide or dioxin exposure and various health effects, concluding that there's sufficient evidence of an association between herbicide exposure and chloracne, which appears to be a skin condition, but is actually a little bit more complicated, and the four forms of cancer you see listed there. There was limited or suggestive evidence of an association with a larger number of health outcomes, including, again, as was previously mentioned, two diseases that were just identified as potentially being associated with exposure, Parkinson's disease and also ischemic heart disease. Also on this list, you'll note that there are other conditions that are found in veterans, including notably hypertension and type 2 diabetes, along with other forms of cancer. And in addition, spina bifida in the offspring of exposed veterans. We also concluded that there wasn't any evidence for an association between herbicide exposure and spontaneous abortion, which is the technical term for miscarriage following paternal exposure to dioxin, TCDD. Many of the health outcomes we looked at, though, there was simply insufficient evidence to draw a conclusion one way or the other about whether herbicide exposure might be associated with that health effect. It doesn't mean that it is, doesn't mean that it isn't, simply that the scientific information isn't sufficient to draw a conclusion. Now, in this latest update 2008 report, we also drew some conclusions which we forwarded to the Department of Veterans Affairs for action. We suggested that they do further research on a series of cohorts, groups of individuals who participated in the Vietnam War and for whom data are available to try to better understand what the health effects of service might be. We also suggested that they use these data to try to draw some better conclusions about certain health outcomes for which there isn't really a lot of good data at the moment. And finally, the expert committee formed for this study suggested to the Department of Veterans Affairs, and thus to the U.S. government, that collaborations be developed to help study the Vietnam population and the effects of herbicide on that population. They also suggested that members of the Blue Water Navy, that is the part of the Navy that served off the coast rather than in the waters, rivers of Vietnam, shouldn't be excluded when evaluating presumptive disease connections for the purpose of compensation, and also a set of other recommendations that you'll see listed here. The second thing that I'd like to talk to you about today very briefly and quickly again is a data set that was collected as part of some earlier research on the health of Vietnam veterans. And this data set is called the Air Force Health Study. It's also known as the Ranch Hand Study. This study was started at congressional direction by the Air Force in 1979. It's interesting in that it followed a group of veterans, the people who were responsible for spraying, and there are approximately 1,200 of those individuals, over a 20-year cycle and collected rather detailed data on them. The same detailed data were also collected on a comparison group of Air Force veterans. This is a study that quite a bit of time and effort was exerted on. Through the end of the study in fiscal year 2006, $143 million had been spent collecting these data. So we're talking about a lot of effort to collect a huge number of data. As you can see from the timeline, we're talking about people who were exposed during the Vietnam conflict up through 1971, and then were studied in particular at those 6 points that you see there where they were subjected to 3-day intensive examinations. Rather a large number of clinical endpoints were evaluated in these examinations. They're listed here. In addition, data were gathered, including biologic samples, notably blood draws, urine and semen samples, and skin and fat biopsies. A number of other pieces of information were collected. Still further, these people were subjected to a series of questionnaires trying to get a better understanding of their perceptions of their health and also demographic and socioeconomic status information. All told, there's a huge amount of information were collected in here. 15,000 chest x-rays, 51,000 serum samples, and the others that you see listed here. In addition, there was also reproductive history gathered, and a follow-up mortality study that not only looked at these veterans, but also expanded the range of the cohort, looking at about 20,000 subjects. A number of papers have been generated using the Air Force Health Study data. These are papers on how TCDD reacts in the body and on Vietnam veterans' health status. The data that have been collected during this study have been used to help substantiate the connection between type 2 diabetes and herbicide exposure and also spina bifida in the children of veterans. Towards the end of the study, the Congress began to recognize that the huge amount of time, effort, and cost that had been put in this study was about to be lost because the study was coming to the end, and asked the Institute of Medicine to evaluate the merit of retaining and maintaining the data that were collected at the end of the study. As a result of that request, the Institute of Medicine generated this report. We concluded that there were several areas where VA should be giving consideration, in particular the value of the research assets, the alternatives for the future of those assets, who should be taking care of them, and how future work should be supported. We concluded that the data were unique, that there wasn't any other epidemiologic data set of Vietnam veterans that contained as detailed data over as long a period of time, and that it followed that there was scientific merit in maintaining and retaining these data and fostering future study. As a result of this, the Congress passed in 2007 a law that directed the Air Force to turn over the assets, that is the data and the biologic samples, to the Institute of Medicine. The Air Force Health Study personnel sought permission from the study subjects for this transfer. Over 95% consented, and in 2007 we received the data. Now, institutionally, we don't have the in-house capability to maintain biospecimens, but the Air Force Research Laboratory at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, which is in Dayton, agreed to assume this responsibility. They are holding that the samples that you saw listed in an earlier slide in 23 ultra-low temperature freezers at their facility. A year after they directed the transfer, the Congress passed a second law which directed the Department of Veterans Affairs to provide the Institute of Medicine with funds to allow us to foster additional research on the materials and to maintain the biologic samples. We're currently working with VA to try to obtain this funding. Once we get it, our plan is to make it available to interested researchers. In fact, we encourage interest in this data set. We think it is a rich and interesting data set to solicit proposals from qualified researchers, subject them to standard protocols for evaluating human subject research, to foster work being done on them, and to promote publication of the research results. I've listed here the URLs that you could use to gather more data on the this, and as I said, those are printed on the slide handouts that I have in the back of the room. Thank you.
Are there any quick questions?
Yes, Darko, I was going to ask you, do those sources relate specifically what, I guess, effects, diseases, disorders are associated with which particular herbicide, for example, 4-D-2-4-5-T, you said it rather than just a general incorporation of due to the herbicide?
The expert committees that were formed to do these studies didn't draw connections about particular connections between particular herbicides and outcomes. As it turns out, the vast majority of the research that was reviewed by the committee related to dioxin, in particular 2,3,7-8 tetrachlorodibenzopyridioxin, which is abbreviated as TCDD and is what most people mean when they say dioxin.
The slide you had on the blue water NAD was not excluded from the compensation study. However, they were different, weren't they, from the, say, riverine sailors, and which may have been exposed?
The Department of Veterans Affairs uses the information that we create in these studies in order to make decisions regarding compensation. Their current policy indicates that if they use what's called a boots on ground policy, that if you took one step in Vietnam, you're presumed to have been exposed to dioxin and the herbicides. However, there are people who served in ships that were just off the coast, and there's been a question, indeed a controversy, within the Vietnam veteran population as to whether or under what circumstances people in the blue water, that so-called blue water Navy, ought to be eligible for the same compensation as the boots on the ground veterans. Actually, since this report was completed, the Department of Veterans Affairs has asked us to conduct a study that evaluates whether and under what circumstances they might have been exposed to herbicides. So that's something that will probably be coming out in 2012.
Okay, and finally, the periodic updates I receive from the Department of Veterans Affairs on Agent Orange, are those studies by Veterans Affairs researchers due to the information in the studies you provide, do they draw from that, or is that completely?
Well, the same law that requested that we conduct these studies directs the Department of Veterans Affairs to evaluate the results of those studies and to evaluate whether that should result in changes in VA compensation policy. So a couple of months ago now, when Secretary Shinseki announced that ischemic heart disease and Parkinson's disease would be treated as compensable for Vietnam veterans, that was as a result of the latest, update 2008. Should new conclusions be drawn in 2010, VA will be obligated to evaluate whether that should result in a change in policy.
The quick comment, the committees are put together of scientists by the Institute of Medicine. They then review the peer-reviewed publications and come up with conclusions. The VA then makes a policy decision which reflects the science to a degree, but also reflects public policy. Yes?
Is there any thought to continuing collection of data from the 2,700 people in the ranch?
It would certainly be a possibility. The big challenge would be the cost that would be involved in collection of the data. I would love to see more data collected, but even if it wasn't, the information that we have now still constitutes a very rich database that hasn't really been exploited.
If you could extend it, leaving aside the cost, how many more rounds before you feel that it would be declining value?
That would be a good question for an epidemiologist, and that's not my training.
Let me throw out an answer that some epidemiologists speculate, that we are going to see an increase in cancers as people age. and we are going to see an increase in thyroid disease. So for that reason, the this unique data set, just as the Vietnamese are a unique cohort, those exposed to Agent Orange should yield information throughout the life of the study. The study was extremely expensive because the patients, the volunteers, and the controls got an extremely expensive medical examination, far more expensive than is usually done in this kind of research. It can be done for much less. The other question that you asked, TCDD alone, the one dioxin that contaminates Agent Orange, of the 10 to 20 or 30 dioxins or dioxin-like chemicals in the body, was the one that was measured until the last go-around, when all the dioxin-like chemicals were analyzed. And I would expect we'll see something like the 4% to 97% of the dioxin toxicity in the American vets who sprayed it, just like we did in the Vietnam, from the dioxin in Agent Orange. The most recent publications by the team, the original Air Force team, did point out the higher the dioxin level, the more correlation with certain cancers, prostate cancer, melanoma, diabetes, but the time served in Vietnam, the time served in Southeast Asia, whether Vietnam or other countries, was also related to an increase in the cancers. So it looks as though dioxin is contributing to the cancers and also something else, whether it's other chemicals, something, and there are other chemicals found, pesticides and others, in Vietnamese and in the American population for that matter.
I'm also living in Vietnam. Cervical cancer is 5 times more prevalent in the southern part of the country where the volume is great as compared to the north. Has anybody specifically looked at whether our female veterans who are exposed to dioxin have been more likely to develop cervical dysplasias compared to our female veterans who had no such exposures?
There's been a tiny amount of work on female veterans. It was a rather small cohort, and I'm not directly familiar with research on cervical cancer, but I couldn't tell you whether or not it
that,
might.
That might be a good direction for future investigation. Mm-hmm.
What are you citing? What are you citing for the Vietnam data?
The data from the Vietnamese population-based tumor registries.
But those are two hospital-based registries only, I believe, the Oncology Hospital in Hanoi and the Oncology Hospital in Ho Chi Minh City.
They became population-based. In Hanoi, they became population-based in 1990. In Ho Chi Minh City, they became population-based in 1996.
But are they representative of the general population?
As
because
well
they were not for a long time.
They're considered to be represented, as well as any population-based tumor registries are in any developing countries. They're considered to be representative. IARC in Lyon has considered them representative.
That's very important finding, if it holds up. Can that be, is it searchable anywhere? Has it been published anywhere?
Where
can we find it?
I've seen your author on the paper publishing that, so I'll be happy to provide it a copy.
Thank you. And obviously it's of good quality.
By the way, these glasses belong to whom?
Me.
Yes.
Okay, for the, thank you very much, David. That was an elegant presentation in a timely fashion.
You can't get out?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm supposed to jump over.
Actually, I'd like to take this home.
Yeah.
It's yours. Unofficially. For a last presentation, we're going to have a description of the now rather famous and unique lawsuit where Vietnamese citizens sued the chemical companies which manufacture dioxin, and it's very interesting history so far.
Yeah, I don't know if any, how many people are aware of this lawsuit and how much of the background. Okay, so I wasn't sure how much background to give you. Dean Kokoris, who is the lawyer representing the Vietnamese in U.S. courts for this lawsuit, was unable to come. He was in Vietnam all last week and then had a case in New York City. He actually now works for the city of New York and had a case that he had to be at today, so he couldn't come down. So he asked me to just give a general summary of where things stand. In 2004, the Vietnamese Association of Victims of Agent Orange filed a lawsuit in U.S. courts suing the chemical companies, Dow, Monsanto, and the long list of companies that had produced the herbicides for use during the war. It actually gets very complicated because there's actually two cases. There was the what's called the international law case, which was using the Alien Torts Claims Act, and then there was also a local national case that was basically a product liability lawsuit. At the same time, U.S. veterans had also been suing the chemical companies. The original lawsuit that was filed in the 80s was settled out of court, and there was, at that time, the largest settlement in a court case, in a class action court case, and that over the preceding years, when the case was settled in the early 80s, that fund was distributed to some of the veterans who were part of that class action case. And then after that, there was political pressure to get the law passed to start the IOM work that David talked about. But in regards to when the Vietnamese filed, in addition to their cases, there was these veterans' cases that were still alive in the courts for veterans who filed because their illnesses came after the settlement, and they felt that they should also have a legal case going forward because they didn't know they were part of the class at the time. And of course the Vietnamese weren't part of the original lawsuit in the 80s. The Vietnamese they brought on to the team some American lawyers. Dean was one of them, who, and they filed in New York State. In the court, they filed in Judge Weinstein's court, which was, Judge Weinstein was the same lawyer who was part of the original 1984 lawsuit. And Judge Weinstein, after, the period of going through the court process, he dismissed the case. So the lawyers for the Vietnamese, they appealed that case in the Second Circuit of Court of Appeals in New York, and that appeal was also dismissed. And their final stage of in the legal system was they petitioned the U.S. Supreme Court to hear the case, and the Supreme Court refused to, they decided not to take it up. The reasons for dismissing go all the way back to Weinstein's decision. In the Alien Claims Tort Act case, they had to prove, the lawyers for the Vietnamese had to prove that this was a war crime, that the use of the chemicals during the Vietnam War constituted a violation of the international Geneva Conventions. Weinstein determined that because the chemical, the Agent Orange and the other herbicides were not used to intend to poison the population, even though there might be dioxin that was in there that was a poison, the intent was not to poison the people. It wasn't used like mustard gas was used in World War II. The intent was to clear the land, and it was because of that intent it was determined that it was not a violation of the international conventions against war, and therefore not a war crime. And so that the international case was dismissed for that reason. In both the veterans' cases that were still alive and the Vietnamese state case, against the chemical companies, it was determined that because the chemical companies were contractors of the U.S. government to produce these herbicides, they fall under the same immunity as the government. U.S. government is immune to suit. I mean, technically you could do it, but it's rather
impossible. And because of that government immunity, that the chemical companies who were basically under contract, were under contract from the U.S. government to provide the herbicides, they were also immune. So therefore, any negative effects of these herbicides were not, you weren't able to sue the chemical companies for those negative effects. As the base, I mean, there's some very complicated other other reasons, but those are the two main reasons. And at this point, the case for the Vietnamese is over, and for the veterans, for that matter, it's pretty much very little chance of any future cases that will come into the U.S. court systems for this. And veterans are going through the legal, I mean, the legislature system. For the Blue Water Navies, for instance, there was a bill that was introduced to include Blue Water Navy veterans as part of the compensation package of, for veterans. So there's efforts through the legislation, but any the legal system, it's pretty much has reached its conclusion. People have asked whether it's possible for the Vietnamese to sue international courts. And that's also would be very difficult for the international. I always get the two international courts messed confused in my head. But first of all, for the International Criminal Court, who would you bring? To the court, it would John F. Kennedy signed back in the day when we started the herbicides. John F. Kennedy was the one who determined that we're going to use. We can't sue Kennedy. Nixon, would you bring Nixon into court? I mean, there's no one that you would, in the criminal court, that you would be able to bring. And I don't think you could even bring chemical companies to that particular court. And that's the court, say, like, you know, where war criminals like Milosevic are tried. And then in the international court, which is a government-to-government court, the Vietnamese government would have to bring the U.S. government to that court for this for the use of Agent Orange, and that's politically is not going to happen. And also, the U.S. isn't even a party to that court, so it would be very difficult to bring them. And even if you were ruled in the favor of the Vietnamese in that case, the U.S. government would then have to pay whatever penalties that, and they've, in their recent history, have not paid up when there's been a decision against them. And the third option is to sue in Vietnam. The Koreans did that. They sued Dow and Monsanto in South Korea. That case actually was settled in their favor, ruled in their favor. It's now in appeals in South Korea. But again, the Vietnamese, though Monsanto and Dow are both physically present in Vietnam, it is highly unlikely that any case would be filed in Vietnam against those chemical companies. One of the positive things of the case, though, was that it did bring a lot of international attention to this issue of Agent Orange in Vietnam. A lot of press coverage during the time of the case, occasional press coverage now. I will remind you to look into the Chicago Tribune in the next month. There will be a five-part series about the impact of Agent Orange on veterans and the Vietnamese. So keep that in mind if you do Google searches. You should see something sometime in November, or December. That's about it for the case.
And I know that's been a sore spot with Vietnam vets, not even being recognized for the fact that they knew something was sprayed, but the United States government denied it. So just the fact that we are now acknowledging it should be something positive. And are we taking care of them health-wise, at least?
David explained and he probably answered this better than I, but I mean, there is a structure in place to provide compensation for veterans if they have one of those diseases that he had listed. But like in any process, that's you have to then go to your VA, you have to file an application, you have to show that you are in country, bring in your military history records. And it's a long process, and it does, I mean, there's a huge backlog as well in the VA system for processing these, not just Agent Orange-related claims, but, you know, there's a whole new bunch of veterans coming in who have disability compensations as well. So it's, vets are dissatisfied in how long it can take, but I heard someone yesterday who told me their father received his claim for diabetes back within 3 months. So there, hopefully that means there's some positive movement, and maybe David can talk to that more. But
well, let's be clear. There are two sections of the Department of Veterans Affairs, the Veterans Benefits Administration and the Veterans Health Administration. If you're talking about receiving health care, all veterans are eligible for some form of health care. That health care is not based on any recognition of a particular exposure that might have occurred during the war. Instead, it's on a far more general basis. It depends on your length of service, the nature of your disability, and the like. So health care is provided to all veterans according to a common set of rules. In addition, there is a compensation system which is in place for veterans under certain circumstances. For Vietnam veterans, those circumstances are most typically, but not exclusively, those associated with herbicide exposure. For example, there's also a compensation system in place for those who are prisoners of war. That is a separate system, and that is not related to the health benefits that all veterans receive.
Your comment about denial reminds me that for many years we would hear statements from Dow Chemical, president of Dow Chemical, chief executive, that the only harm Agent Orange caused was a temporary skin rash. And when I was in the U.S. Army during the Vietnam War, I don't think even that much was acknowledged that we had any problem whatsoever. It's been, and the Vietnamese, by the way, point out U.S. veterans are being compensated for certain presumptive Agent Orange conditions, diseases. Why aren't we getting compensated by the U.S. government for something? So that's an interesting, for Agent Orange exposure. So that's been an interesting historical debate, which is ongoing, of course.
Yeah, at this point, the Vietnamese are not, some maybe individually, but in general, from the government standpoint, they're not looking for a compensation from the U.S. government. In fact, technically, when we signed our normalization relations between the two countries and reestablished diplomatic relations, any reparations were signed off, you know, so we cannot provide war reparations to victims of war in Vietnam at this point. What the Vietnamese are asking for is some technical assistance, training, helping to provide some of these rehabilitation services and centers and assistance in improving medical care, rehabilitation care, special education, and so forth, but not looking for a similar program like we have with veterans, which is direct compensation. Though the Vietnamese government themselves do have a direct compensation system, they're not asking the U.S. government to contribute towards that.
It would be politically unwise or economically unwise if you have large American countries moving into your country to start suing American countries. So there's a problem there as well. Any other questions? If not, thank you all very much for your attendance. Thank you, participants. Thank you. And if you want to know about the Ford Foundation, you should ask Mr. Bailey, who just walked back in.
Hi. Vietnamese education.
Yeah.
Is actually one of the South Vietnamese government owed against the U.S. government?
Yes.
It
actually was technically, it was floating.
It was food aid. Yeah, and that was in some form of a grant as opposed to actual, like now sending soybeans over there. And so it was a grant under various aid packages, not so much the construction or the war effort, but it was more of direct assistance.
This is my part, so you'll know when the name's in your inbox.
Yeah, so, yeah, and so it was determined when part of, back when they had the same, where they signed up on reparations, the Vietnamese government in the north, or the, you know, the current Vietnamese government agreed in that competency, you know, in the negotiations to pay that debt back. And what Kerry and McCain, about almost 10 years ago now, I believe, or shortly after that, because now it's been 15 years, yeah, probably about 10 years ago, put a bill through Congress that that money that the Vietnamese were paying, instead of just going into the general treasury account, it would be set aside, half of set aside for VEF, and so that's what happened. Yeah.
I just, because the way that's reported is that I've seen a report that Vietnam's paying reparations to the United States.
Yeah.
And in a sense, that's...
It's not quite accurate.
It's not quite accurate, but it's one of those things.
Yeah. It's
gosh,
paying,
you don't
want
to touch the 10-foot pole.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's paying back a non-existing, now non-existing government's war debt, a debt from the war years to the U.S.
It's really, it's kind of chilling, the idea that a government that no longer exists, you know, it's...
Yeah.
Wow.
And it happened, I mean, the same thing, you know, with Cambodia that's happening, you know, in other countries as well.
The same
thing. You know, they're still paying back certain debts, but it never was turned around.
Is that right? So what kind of debt does Cambodia pay back?
It's not as much, but it's a similar, you know, when they normalize the,
sense is probably completely wrong, but what people forget is that during the war,
I mean, Simon's
well,
probably, probably pretty good.
Yeah, Simon's probably pretty good, but particularly outside of Simon. I mean, they just barely existed. And in the north, it was better. Not great, but better.
Okay.
So there's things like people don't look at those sort of comparisons.
Communism is good for certain things.
Yeah.
It really is.
Cancer, they do not.
And they have things, you know, like I said, you know,
it's on that cusp.
Yeah, and people don't realize how it is the tension down the line.
Yeah.
Or
And my focus was more legacy resistant.
I do think,
I'm a pragmatist, I'm not sort of like this leftist answer.
Have a greater chance of making
I don't think I'm gonna end war. But God, I hope that we at least remind people that there's a long term consequence.
It's all about the ripples of power.
Yes, exactly.
Come on.
Yes, exactly. And then he's trying to remind people that that's
no questions. Because you never know.
This is many.
He went to work.
Thanks.
Labs.
Yeah, no, you send me a copy of that. Yeah, great.
Thanks a lot. Keep up the great work, both of you guys. I mean, thanks so much.
Thank you. I'm not
Yeah, sure.
Sorry.
So,
I've been working on several
things. I'm going to go back tomorrow morning. I was going to go back tonight.
We actually
had
some
success. I want to go to this.
Where are you?
My day job at Kaiser Permanente.
Oh, well, it's reception.
I'll email you a copy of the article and some other. So you lived in Panama until 2007.
It got too late. I wanted to stay there. I mean, I hope because that would be paid. You're not staying.
Is that right? Okay.
There's other people I've just seen.
Once or twice a year since 1994, I'll be going back. I set my own nonprofit.
What's it called?
The Vietnam American Cervical Cancer Prevention Project. And we work with mostly the South because that's where the disease is. And our main partners are the oncology hospital.
Yeah, no, I haven't been in a long time.
So, it's been
transformative. And you're obviously very happy to feel there's a relationship with.
Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't think to ask the question until I came here. I just figured some of y'all already looked at it. But since there is this circumstantial evidence that it might be, it makes sense that somebody should ask the question, since from a research perspective it would be easy enough to answer given all the material that's already been collected. So, that's. Thank you very much.
That's the subject of your next speaker.
Okay.
I want to thank you for the Mother Ford Foundation, a nice college. A long time ago, the Ford Foundation decided to fund a project at the University of Chicago on China College, and we're showing that the last 2 years of high school were not necessary. So half of my classmates.
My daughter will be delighted to hear this. She's a 12th grader.
Anyway,
go ahead.
Well, I did not get the Ford Foundation because I was a couple of months too old, but it provided a huge amount of money for the University of Chicago and the Science Branch Campus, Shiner College in Montreal, Illinois. So they had a lot of extra money left over, some of which I had.
Well,
so it affected my life.
Well, it's always, I worked in January with the 32 years of the Ford Foundation, all the first 30 of which were in Africa and Asia. So I have always relished the impact of stories even decades after decades later. I find people in some contact with the Ford Foundation. It's wonderful to hear these stories. Won't help us.
I realize it.
It will help the Ford Family Foundation, I presume.
Yes.
No, tomorrow morning. Susan, I wanted to talk to you for a few minutes if you have. Don't have to leave. I'm just going to hang out until you're free to.
Yeah, no, I
should
say
there
was this.
They're just social events, don't they?
There was one for, I thought it was.
Health and Human Rights.
The Health and Human Rights one. Physicians for Health. Yeah, that's the one. Are you ready for that?
Sure.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Okay, I've got to go to my school's one instead.
Oh.
You're an alumni.
Well, I'm an alumnus and I'm also a teacher. So I'll write about and maybe another one more friend.
Well, it was terrific to see you.
It was good seeing you.
Thank you so much. When I think of all the decades.